You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists from all over the world. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. Please search for Fakeologist Audio Chat and Fakeologist Main Show on your favorite podcast app. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. To listen to the live stream, go to fake11.com/radio2. Now, on with the audio chat.
Hello, we're in the live stream, and it's Friday, 3rd of December in the UK, and I'm joined once again by Bivvy, and I think Fast Belly has just joined the room too. That song we just heard as well was from a band called The Deers, a Summer of Protest song. I came up on my shuffle today, and it felt fitting, so I thought we'd throw it in there. But how are you, boys?
Good, how you doing, mate?
Very good, thanks.
Yeah, no, it was a nice song. It was a nice, intro. I feel like it always sets the scene pretty well. A nice song.
Yeah, I often wonder whether some of those songs are, that's about 10 years old, to be honest with you. So I think it's probably coming more from that perspective. Yeah, I don't know, it's not quite up to scratch, is it? That's sort of the idea of revolution. No. We're kind of beyond that in a sense, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's 10 years ago though. I mean, yeah, what, 2011? Man, like it's hard to think what 2011 meant to me at all. I think it was like the beginning of Barack Obama's like second term, maybe. Or Barry Satoro's second term. And nothing compared to now in terms of thinking about COVID and all that kind of stuff.
For sure. And even the coined term of revolution as well. You got to wonder the intention behind it. Is it, you know, is a revolution ever grassroots, or is it, you know, is it an idea handed to us to change, so the empire changes clothes, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's like revolution against what? I mean, I never really got the whole, we have like soft revolutions every election. So, I mean, unless they're
the word revolution. The word revolution is a little problematic to my way of thinking, because if you think about something revolving, it just goes back to the beginning. You know?
Yeah, I think we touched on this last week, yeah. Mm. It's true.
I just, I don't want to revolve again. I just want off the ride. I want off the merry-go-round.
But, you know, again, you've got to wonder, is there... revolution is a word, but then, you know, there could be different intentions behind who's pushing the term, if you know what I mean. So one's idea of revolution could literally mean a good thing, like what we want, but then another form of revolution could be, like you said, just revolving it around and around.
I mean, all the ones we know about didn't seem like they really had that much benefit. The Bolshevik Revolution, the Maoist Revolution, and the American Revolution.
Political revolutions, I like that, I think. But I suppose a deeper way of looking at it would be self-revolution, revelation, etc. You know, the more revelations you have, the more, we can reset things for ourselves with different perspectives. But, rather than looking at it as a global thing or a country, a nation thing or political thing.
Yeah, it is a good point, like the thinking about yourself and the kind of changes you undergo. And whether, you know, you could associate that with a revolution of thought that you carry yourself with, perhaps. That's certainly a topic that we've gone over, like having autonomy and that kind of thing over yourself. And if you can relate revolution to something like that, then, I mean...
Origins of revelation? The biblical side of it. But then I suppose, you know, we also have things where you have an epiphany. So if you kind of have your own revelation. So I just wonder what the connection between revelation and revolution would be.
Well, I think revelation, like, is the reveal kind of thing.
Yeah, revelation.
Yeah, I think there's another, I'm pretty sure they call it the Book of the Apocalypse, maybe. But I know that the apocalypse means the reveal. So I think that kind of is where the Book of Revelation, in terms of English. I know you meant, like, revelation is in different contexts, but the apocalypse means the great reveal or the reveal.
Sure.
And that's where English translations translated the book into revelation.
Because you do have a word, APOC, and lips as well. So I'm trying to think of the meaning of those two, though.
Yeah, it is interesting, like, because I'm trying to undergo... She wore a surgical mask on her face, walking around
at the grocery store, a silly piece of cloth on her face. You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com. A surgical mask on her face.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. What I was saying was that looking into Latin words, I always like immediately think there was a word the other day, rorate, is in R-O-R-A-T-E, and it just means down in a sense. So like in context, it was rorate chali, which is down from heaven. When I thought of the word rorate, I was like rotate. You know, I had that whole revolve kind of thing, but I guess it was just a different direction. In a sense, rather than spinning.
Yeah, and I do wonder, you know, everything going on at the moment, how much of this is a part of that sort of reveal and that, you know, apocalyptic times, the you know, revelation of method, you know, because they are, to a degree, have got all cards on the table, you know what I mean? Their hand is shown, it's all there, yeah. It's not hiding anymore, it's in plain sight. You know, you've got to wonder how much a part of that is we're experiencing at the moment.
Mm, yeah. I just don't know still really, like, who's behind it. I think that maybe is a little bit of a pointless kind of venture. Because the obvious evil is quite tangible in front of you. So, yeah. But, I mean, if you're going to attack that stuff, like the masks, the vaccines, all that stuff, the social distancing, I mean, you kind of want to know who's behind it. And you don't want to attack, like, shoot the messenger so much so. You know, grab, what do you call it, some local legislator and pin all the charges on him or whatever, you know.
Sure. Just like the politicians on the TV, like, directing your energy towards them is a waste, because they're reading a script and stuff comes from far beyond them.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, fast. Go ahead, man.
No, I was just clearing my throat. Okay. I should be on mute right now, but sorry.
I was actually thinking, because I've been off voting for about, I don't know, 5 years or something now, and I'm starting to get back into the thing where I'm like, should I be voting again? Like, kind of like questioning and doubting myself, you know.
It depends if you mean locally or federally, and, you know, things like that. I think that obviously the more micro, the more effect it could potentially have, but the bigger that scale gets and the more you zoom out into nations or whatnot, it's utterly pointless, really.
Mm, anyway, so I was looking at the Omicron while the song was playing before, and you noticed that I said the Omicron, you know, like how older people say the Safeways and the Coles.
Or the YouTubes.
The AIDS, the YouTubes. So I was looking at the Omicron before, and I just typed into DuckDuckGo Omicron, and the first thing that came up was an ABC article. So I gave them a little bit of traffic. What do you call it? It's annoying that I read the article, and it's very much like a tabloid kind of thing, I guess you could say. And it's interesting, like, how places like the ABC are allowed to really, like, spread scientific misinformation.
It's their job.
It is their job to, like, in a sense, like, unofficially. But it's just, you know, we're all bound to this kind of, like, scientific kind of force mode of thinking. And, these kind of people that write these articles are not, and they just can kind of, say what they want, as long as it, like, is sort of in the correct line of thinking. So this had to do with, I'm trying to find it now, I can't see it, but it had to do, here it goes. So viruses aren't technically living things. They rely on the cells of other organisms to survive and reproduce. So, you know, that's one of these half-truths, I guess you could say.
That's already logically contradictory in that sentence right there. They aren't living, and then he talks about survival.
They don't survive
if they're not alive.
Yeah, and they don't survive. They just replicate. They're not living, but they do replicate. It's an interesting thing, but it's
and
a
contradiction.
If you believe that theory, which I do not subscribe to the virus theory at all, you know, of course, I don't know how you guys, where you've landed on that, but second listening to Thomas Kawan presentation to some group, I don't I don't know. It was probably posted on Fakeologist or something, where he breaks down the whole process of what they call isolation and
yes, I've listened to that.
Pathogenesis, yeah. And gosh, man, it's just it's such a murky mess that they have going on with all of the methodology they use to come to these conclusions. It's so suspect when you hear it broken down that way.
Yeah, it comes across as literally being made up. There's just no, there's no substance to it at all. It's, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, well, I mean, the very fact that they can't look at them as they move around, like they have to look at them in a stasis. Like,
but again, it's assuming there's something to look at as well.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's what do you call it? I guess they're looking at something. It's just they're kind of like speculation. I guess you could say, like, very heavy speculation, you know?
And yeah,
like,
they've got an agenda with a theory that they want to prove to themselves so they can make it public. So they just find what they need to find, call it what they need to call it.
Well, I mean, if you look at, what do you call it? The real mainstream definition as to why they're not alive is because they don't have cell walls and they don't undergo metabolism the same way that, like, bacteria and life does. So that's the mainstream opinion. But, I mean, I would argue that it's like, you can't even, these things are so small anyway. You couldn't even pry apart their cell walls anyway, right?
You're right.
Well,
that whole fairy tale idea of that the smallest of things can be the biggest of threats, you know. That whole thing about being afraid of spiders, you know what I mean, compared to the scale of a human. The smaller they can make the boogeyman, the more fearful it can be, to the point where it's invisible, you know. That's how fairy tale-like it gets. Sorry, Fast Valley, I cut you off there.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that in terms of size, that Kwan thing I was referencing talked about, I mean, he was in agreement with the virologists in attendance that they can't see them because they have to be concentrated, but he even got up to number of 100,000 people submitting samples. If they could get concentrates from 100,000 people, could they see it? And they still said no.
Yeah.
So it's like we're dealing in something they can't see at all, ever. They see the effects of the things they do, but they see the same effects without any sort of viral material as well. And they admit they have no way of distinguishing between the two. So the whole thing, it's just so... The only thing I can see a virus does is support the current agenda. I think that's what its purpose is. Nothing more than that. But, you know, it's the idea of a virus that they use to do what they're doing now.
Yes, yeah, I would agree. It's as simple as that. Yeah.
I think they're actually, I think they're like 100 times smaller than what you can see on your standard microscope, you know? So, I mean, to me,
so they say as well. I get what you're saying, but it is just.
I mean, I always have to say this with, like, I was going to give a disclaimer, but it's like, at the same time, I guess, like, so according to the mainstream narrative, it's like, you know, you need a microscope, which isn't even really a microscope. It's just I guess you could say but it's like an image generator, you know. I think an electron microscope is more accurately called an electron micrograph because, like, it doesn't really print you a picture. It kind of prints you electrical signals so you can tell what elemental key parts are within that sample.
Sure. And then it depends on what model they're working with, how they dissect that, what they're observing, isn't it? So it's depending on where you're coming from.
Yeah, the whole area is frustrating because if you go on the Wikipedia page and look up electron microscope, you'll get images of that insects and, like, right up close image of their head. And it's like, but a normal microscope can get to the bacteria level, which is way smaller than an ant's head, you know? So it's like, I have to agree with you, Fast, about the whole electron microscope thing. It's hairy. It's hairy territory, you know? Like,
well, I understand they cost possibly tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, and you have to have a certain set of credentials to even get access to one, and your credentials to get access probably depend on your political views as much as anything.
That would suggest to me that they potentially don't exist, if that's the sort of narrative they sell, that they cost that much and only a handful of special people get to use these things. It almost just sounds like that's also made up.
I'm not even sure, besides kind of looking at really small, looking at things in their elemental structures and stuff like that, as in, so everyone knows, like, what these things that they say say about compound structures. They've got like a chemistry way of drawing them and that kind of thing. Like, I don't think they are always actually like that. We don't really have a picture of that per se. And these electron micrographs are like, they kind of draw a picture with numbers, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so they're working on the model of math to
right, and exactly. Yeah, so, but then it's like, where's the microscope come in? You know, like it's a misappropriated kind of technical name for something.
Yeah, for sure. And it's you know, you think about how we've been sold a story of outer space and what all those lights in the sky are, and the fact that they're, you know, they're this big and they're this shape, and it's, you know, got this material, and it's, you know, it serves this purpose. You know, there's a story on each one of those little lights in the sky. So it's like, that's outer space. And when you go inner space, I'd say it's just as much as a fairy tale as that story.
Yeah, I see. That's right. Yeah.
It might speak to people's idea of having to have an answer. And the person that comes up with the, you know, the most credible or whatever, believable, I guess, I don't even know if I want to call it sensible explanation, is just what people will latch onto because they don't like the idea of not knowing. And so whoever can create the narrative that has some explanation of phenomenon, and they get to own it, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, it's almost like the con man, isn't it? Who can deceive the rest into, you know, the confidence game, who can deceive the rest into being the most confident and therefore got the answers. It's like, yeah, exactly what you're saying. I think there's a lot to that.
What happens when we die? Well, if you're good, you go where the angels are and you get to sing and live eternally, happily ever after. And if you're bad, then you burn. And there's that explanation for that. And so that's done and dusted. Don't have to worry about that anymore.
Sure, but then at the same time, that would leave you with the feeling of, whether true or not, you're better off acting in a way that would result in the angels over that, wouldn't you? So it is an incentive to be good.
Pascal's wager.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's like, what do you call it? You're better off just siding with religion, just on a wager principle alone or whatever, because it is sort of,
yeah, it is a, you know, an ultimate thing of willpower, and that, you've got the power to make a decision every moment to go with what you feel is good or what you feel is bad. So it's always there.
Yeah.
The dilemma. So it's a no brainer to go with the good, because it's,
but my point in saying that was, nobody knows what happens when you die. That's the whole point. We don't know. We're never going to. But somebody came up with that story about heaven and hell and all that stuff. And, you know, it's as good an explanation as any, I guess. So we'll go with that one, you know.
I guess.
A bunch of people get sick at the same time. Oh, well, there's these little, you know, boogeymen floating around that we can't see. And that must be it. They're floating around in the same place and people pass them back and forth. And, you know, that's how it happens.
Yeah. It is kind of interesting, the whole, the fact that people are kind of more or less, concerned about zombies at the moment, you know, the virus zombie, neither dead nor alive, and it's coming to get you kind of thing.
And that's why even the, I keep forgetting what it's called. Is it Omicron?
Yeah, Omicron,
whatever, yeah.
I think that's a metaphor for society, because people, they are zombified because they're too afraid to actually live. But they're not dead. So they're kind of like undead. So they're, you know.
Like a virus.
Exactly. I guess viruses are zombies too.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It's all leading to, what do you call it? We as people, whatever we do, we kind of screw things up. Because, I mean, if you come from the angle that, even when I started, I'll give a little anecdote. Even when this whole thing first started, I was doing, like park maintenance for like a big metropolitan park, and I was picking up so much, of the mask, all kinds of masks and stuff. And when you bring that one up with people, and it's like how bad of a decision it was to do the masks, a lot of people automatically go into, oh, we're just terrible for the earth, you know what I mean? Like, they just have that kind of like that worldview is already within them, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, they've got no love for themselves, clearly.
Well, yeah, for humanity even as well. Like, I mean,
yeah, people, but you can't project that onto humanity without having it yourself as well, you know.
Perhaps, yeah, like a love for life, I guess you could say, you know, because I've always considered myself.
Don't you think a lot of that is programming and indoctrination that convinces people that they're, you know, not good, insignificant, just blobs of matter, the pox on the earth, whatever.
So that's why it does beg that big question that we always ask of why are we different then, you know? We've all had very similar lives to most of them, so it's not like we're super unique people. It's just for some reason we've got the eyes to see. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know. I used to consider it. I used to take Marcus Allen's opinion where it was like people in this community are like sort of failures in some regard. So they've had to have like a lot of introspection. You know, I would class myself as that.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Bonjour, je suis Unreal et vous écoutez Radio Fakeologist avec Abirato et ses invités.
That was unreal.
There you go. Oh, was it? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Go on.
I would consider myself at least
a failure.
At least five, ten years ago within that spectrum. Now I have definitely a different opinion of myself, but at one stage in my life for sure, and that's why I kind of like dug more and more into this. You know, whereas I saw friends of mine who became very successful, they were still into this stuff, but it matters less to them. You know, they've got an image to uphold. They've got maybe more to lose, but that's from my perspective as well. You know, they've just got an image to uphold. Why would they talk about this stuff or get into it at all when they are well onto six-figure territory and that kind of thing?
Yeah, there is that. And I think also one thing I noticed, like a common denominator amongst types like this is that I'd say most of us seem to be okay on our own as well. So I've always had that my whole life. You know, I've been told even as a child I was happy to play on my own or whatnot. Had plenty of friends throughout life and all that, but I was always very happy with my own company, and I often preferred it, and blah, blah, blah. So I wonder if that's a common thread we all share.
Yeah, well, that's
therefore, you're not looking for the crowd's approval.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, my mother always said I was like that, and I only know really now because my son isn't, and she's like, he's so much different from you. You know, she'll echo that to me, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right. She's like, you're always happy lining up, you know, matchbox cars, and whereas my son has to play with someone all the time. Like, he's always very, like, needy, you know, in that respect.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Mine's
a mini-me.
My son's
cheeky as hell, and he loves to do things on his own and figure things out. You leave him in the room for a few minutes and walk back in, and he's stacked one object on top of another on top of another, and it's his mission to get on top of it as well himself, and it's like, he's just, yeah, missed the mission.
it is
an interesting, yeah, go on.
That's a good point, man. That is a good point.
It just came to me as well. Sort of rang true.
Yeah, because the whole failure thing, that just, I really enjoyed the way Marcus like would go into that, and he would be talking about himself as well within that and within that fold. But you know, maybe there's like a feeling amongst people here that they want to be a bit more honest. They're like kind of striving for the objective truth in a sense. I think that could be something there. I certainly feel that way.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
I think that goes without saying. Yeah, definitely.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know how you feel about the name Truther, but I've always felt it's so insufferable, and it's compared to the four atheist guys, the four horsemen of the atheist apocalypse or whatever. One of them made a group called the Brights. Like they called themselves the Brights, as in Britght.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, like, that is just, it's just so cringe making and self-loathing pride to call yourself Bright, because you sit around and like you've got this opinion that other people don't have. I don't know.
Who are these four horsemen?
So Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris, and a guy called Daniel Dennett. So the last two. Actually, you know what? I think Sam Harris is he was pretty popular for a while there, but the last guy, Daniel Dennett, maybe isn't as popular as these other three. And they were kind of heavily promoted kind of atheist types around early 2000s to early 2010s. Then they kind of dropped off, I think, in relevance.
Well, their job was done.
Yeah. I mean, there definitely is a sense that they were given to us, those four. I mean, I got way into, which one was it? Hitchens and I think Sam Harris. I think I used to listen to
Sam Harris. Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, he had quite a good podcast because he was like he also lined up with my views, which was kind of like sort of militant kind of ideology in regards to like defending your nation and that kind of thing against like say Islam and that, but then also being this like kind of like spiritual kind of atheist as well. So anyway, I got into
spiritual
him.
Spiritual atheist.
I know. I've got no other way of really, really spelling it out though, because he was into, technically speaking, I don't think Buddhism is really a religion. And I think they would probably echo that kind of statement, because it's more, it is definitely more like a way of being, a philosophical kind of, approach as opposed to some other kind of philosophical approach. But, there definitely is, and he was always about Buddhism and how much the East taught him and that kind of thing. But with Hitchens, I think it was his, I watched with my wife, he did like a debate tour with someone called Doug Wilson, who's this, I don't know what Protestant denomination he is, but they did a debate tour, and I thought the religious guy came out on top. I was like fully surprised. I always thought this guy was just like a very how could he be wrong kind of guy, and then they released his DVD and I was like, wow.
Miles Mathis just put out a paper on atheism recently, which I found to be kind of insightful.
Okay. In I think I read that.
The holes in the atheist logic. And I posted it on another server. I can find it and post it here. It's a quote from a book, I haven't finished it yet, called The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship. And it's kind of, you know, talking about, I guess you might call it intelligent design or something, and the idea of evolution and the primordial soup, you know, two cells, you know, budding together and getting struck by lightning, creating life, whatever, and randomly evolving to the state of the, you know, world that we see. And the point was, is that, you know, they're going to say that a particular shape might be a circle until something acts on it and changes it to become a square or whatever, you know, however things evolve. But then it has no explanation for why the thing was a circle to begin with. And, you know, why, so there's a lot of problems with this random universe, the way I see it. You know, there's not a lot of explanatory power in that idea.
There's no reason for existence to exist. It's like impossible to get your head around that.
Yeah, I think the paper you were talking about might have been from a while ago, Fast Value, The Illogic of Atheism. Is that the one you were thinking of?
Yeah.
Anyway, what do you think of Miles Mathis, Sean? Have you read much of his stuff?
Tiny bits back when I first heard about him, but I haven't for a good couple of years, to be honest with you.
Right, yeah.
And, but from what I can tell is that it seems like a very on the tip of the spear approach to narrating this, for sure.
Yeah, I almost read everything that he puts out unless I just have no interest in the topic. I more or less like kind of disagree with him most of the time.
Okay.
He's one of those rare things that still enjoy reading it.
Have you got an example of that?
Well, recently I was trying to think of exactly what Fast Value was putting out there, but he had a link to a paper an essay, I'll call it an essay, that he wrote called The Illogic of Atheism. And this might have been what Fast Value was talking about, but this is from 2009. More or less, I would disagree with, he wouldn't stand for more or less one kind of religion or one kind of school of thought, but he breaks down the, as it says in the title, the illogic of atheism. And I always find that to be such a, it's like what's the phrase? Like it's so lukewarm kind of thing. I mean, like there's not a lot like really to offer when you go halfway like that. Like he kind of goes from a scientific perspective, a philosophical perspective, and he touts himself as very philosophical. He's adept at that. Like he's not just intermediate. And when I read his stuff, it's like, man, this guy, his philosophy background is about as good as mine, kind of thing. Maybe a bit more because he's done
some, like most of us.
Like most of us. But at the same time, it's like he Miles Mathis in this paper, he came from like, I guess you could say, like a rationalist perspective. So you have during the Enlightenment, you have these people like the rationalists. So his name's David Hume. You have Kant and these kind of things. Pascal's Wager, as Fast Value mentioned before. I'm not sure if Pascal was from that rationalist kind of era. He possibly is. And so like they've kind of put like a non they don't argue from a supernatural perspective. They argue from like a materialist perspective. And I always find it to be like, it's good for getting over to that side, but it also can be dismantled, I think, very, very easily because it just,
like a lot of parts of our world.
Yeah. But it's like, if you argue from a materialist perspective, the existence of God, it can be struck down just as easily. So I wish I had, so I read it the other night, and I would have read it before, but there was a few bits where I was like, I'm not sure whether I agree with that, but,
so much of this is about, you know, the rhetoric and that as well, isn't it? So you've got one person's logic may not be another person's logic, and depending on the rhetoric used, it could be perceived in, on many levels, you know, so it's really hard to nail that.
Yeah.
From one to one.
You've got to be like, you've got to be interested in it, like the rhetoric as well. Because he did a paper called Pi is 4. It's probably one of his more well-known kind of scientific theories. And as we all know, Pi is 3. blah, blah, blah. That's the common understanding. I showed it to a friend who's very good with maths and stuff, and he was like, this guy's a joke. So it's like, sometimes people just don't, he didn't have any like real argument for me. He just said he's a joke, you know. I was like, oh, all right. I was hoping to get something a bit more than he's a joke, like something sure. Like, you know, because I don't really understand this very well. But yeah, he just wasn't digging it. So,
well, that's often the problem with, you know, say if it's coming from one person's perspective, whether they've written an article or they're got a monologue on a podcast or whatever, or a video, it's, you know, they've got a stream of consciousness where they're just letting it all out, what they, you know, their perspective. If there's no conversation going on with somebody to, you know, pull up on even the first thing he says and says, okay, but what do you mean by that? Let's dissect that first and then move on, kind of thing. Without that interaction, it's you know, you can easily see why people then take something else on as quite dogmatic, because they haven't had, you know, they probably have questions whilst they're listening, but by the time they finish listening, they've taken in the whole picture, and now they kind of wear it as being a new piece of information, but they didn't have a chance to have dialogue, you know, with it.
Yeah, I mean, dialogue's important. I'm not a big fan of the debate kind of the debate thing that happens now, but I mean, some of the best talks I heard from Pokesbusters were like essentially dialogues and like a little bit of debate there. Like Chris Kendall dialogued with some guy who was interested in hearing why Chris didn't believe in evolution, and it was just like extremely profitable.
Yeah, that's great. Like that, exactly that. Like what a thing to focus on. That's perfect. Yeah,
exactly. You know, and it really showed for me personally as well, like how much Chris Kendall had gone into that subject. Like he was very passionate about how bunk evolution is and that kind of thing. You know, so. Like one of the things that he said, not to bang on too much about this, but one of the things that he said was that evolution is unfalsifiable. So that in and of itself, like, violates it as, it not violates, but makes it not a scientific theory because, you need to be able to falsify
It's powerful. That's right. It's weaponized terms like that and powerful sentence like that, that, you know, is a part of the trickery to get people to fall for the authority of it. You know what I mean? Like there's certain sounds being made in that word and the tone to it, you know, those words, the amount of authority that casts upon people is just, that's how people take it.
I think sometimes, like, there's a video that came out, there's a channel I'm subscribed to called The Truth is Stranger Than Fiction, and I think Ab has a few of his videos up on FakoTube, but he did a new one, and he's very much like from this flat earth kind of perspective and that kind of thing, but I like the videos where he focuses on the scientism, or like the scientific worldview, and what was the guy's name? Brian Cox, who I think we were talking about recently, with his Manchester accent, his very snobby Manchester accent. And he's doing this like kind of speech where, it's like an inspirational speech. And he says that, we live in a meaningless universe. He's trying to advocate for, people living, off the earth. Somehow or another, might be on another planet, might be in a little colony or something, you know, like one of them fake.
Basically, you know, politely asking you to leave.
Yeah, pretty much. And like, he's talking about how fragile this place is and all this kind of thing. And then he tops it off with like a meaningless universe. And it's like, well, unfortunately, like, unless you've got someone like the person who made the video to break it down, or you're going to read a transcript, or you're going to see right past what Brian Cox just said, it's a total contradiction, right? You're making making meaning out of a meaningless universe. I mean,
yeah.
It's just it's a non-starter.
Yeah, making a meaningful universe seem meaningless.
Yeah. So it's like, but when you listen to him say it and stuff, and you've got like picture, you know, this is where video is very effective. You've got video with this kind of stuff. It's you know, to someone who just wants to go there and enjoy themselves or watch a video and be amazed. It's like it may as well be as true as 1 + 1 = 2.
Well, yeah, that made me think of David Attenborough. What are your thoughts on him?
Me?
Yeah.
So I always think of his brother, just on a funny note. The first thing that always comes to mind is his brother that was in Jurassic Park. The crazy Jurassic Park owner.
See, I just thought that was him. You know, it could have been him, but they just characterized him as his brother.
This is Jeff Sand, dude.
Laura Mars.
The Phoenician.
Audio Patriot.
Jimmy. Tom Gappa.
Poi Poi.
You're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.
It made me think of there was one night I was with a couple of friends at a bar, and they were trying to tell me about the fact that they watched this David Attenborough show the night before. And, you know, some amazing stuff in the sea and the ocean and all these animals, you know, what these fish can do and these sand creatures. So he's like, oh, I've got to show you a video. I've got to show you this thing. You won't believe what they can do. So he pulls out his phone and, you know, pulls up the YouTube video, which I hate when that happens in public. But
tell me about it.
Proceeds to do it and shows me this video of a, you know, this sort of sand fish creature thing squiggling along the sand, and then it sort of looks up and the camera's catching its eyes, and then it swims away. And then the next bit of footage is this beautiful carved creation in the bottom of the seabed in the sand, like a piece of art. And then my friend's going, wow, can you believe that fish, you know, does that down there? And I was like, mate, you didn't see the fish do that. You saw footage of a fish swimming towards you, and then it cut to a picture in the sand. And because that voiceover of David Attenborough told you a story, and with some, you know, powerful music behind it, that it sold you that story, and that you believe you saw that. It's phenomenal.
Well, hey, I mean, he narrated a documentary on Netflix recently, and I sat there with my wife trying to point out where the CGI was, because there was just obvious CGI in there, you know, like the gorillas climbing the tree. They could get that right, but when the gorillas hit the ground and the shrubs on the ground, when their legs were touching them and brushing them, that's what the CGI couldn't really get right. So I was trying to point this out, but yeah, I mean, what you just said about how someone takes this as like verbatim, you know, without even like thinking about it at all, compared and contrasted with narrated by the best nature voice ever. I bet you hate that one. Like, I've heard that so much. It's like, oh, he's just the best for, you know, narrating nature documentaries. And
people treat him like a god. I've had almost, you know, it blew up one evening with another friend in my workshop, and they were going on about a speech that he did about, you know, this planet and how precious it is, and you know, the future of it and what we can do together to save it and all this, you know, playing all that bullshit. And I'd never watched it, but they had, so they were trying to tell me about it, and you know, they kept attacking me that I hadn't watched it. So what are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. I should watch it before I do this with you, but I haven't seen it, so let's just talk about it anyway. But it's amazing the defense these people have for these characters when they do not know these people at all, yet you're in their life daily and they trust you. Yet when it comes to something like that, you're the devil, because you're questioning their god. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's like you're the enemy, because like you're not on the Attenborough like train. Hop on board, toot, hop on board. You know, and it's like I can already tell from speaking to you. It's like I'm just like, I don't like him just because everyone likes him.
That's what I get accused of all the time.
Sometimes I just embrace that, though. It's like, you know what? Yeah, fuck that. You know, like Attenborough's a loser.
I am the antithesis of mainstream, mate.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, you know what? I'm an IGA guy. I'm not an Aldi, a Coles person. I like IGA, you know? That's an inside baseball joke with myself. But
surely you read the Age as well.
Or what's the free one? The Big Issue or something like that. Beat. I read Beat and Big Issue exclusively. But like, realistically, like, that's just me being funny, but what I actually prefer, because I preferred the narration from old 80s, 90s American documentaries. So, like, even just, like, I reckon, I don't know if you hear Fast Value, but I reckon you could do a good narration voice that I would like, but I think it wouldn't really get much airtime, because everyone else likes upper crust British elites talking over their nature documentaries, you know? Like, wow, I don't really like that very much. I kind of prefer Bush Tucker Man and, you know, kind of like just American dudes with like a nice northwest accent or something like that, you know? Not too south, but also like a little bit of south in there as well. How do you feel about Australian accents, actually, Sean? Like hearing an Australian accent on a documentary or something like that?
There's varying degrees. Sometimes I think it's a particular generation of Australian men particularly that do have quite a nice strong accent. It's not too far, it's not too polite either, but it's just a very confident accent. I do like that part of it, but yeah, with Australian accent, it's not just accent, is it? There's a lot of slang and cutting of words and things like that that add to it.
There's someone I've heard recently and he has a South Australian accent, so it's not too distinct, but there are things like I will say chance, whereas a South Australian will say chance, you know.
Yeah, so I think South Australia have a bit more of the British thing going on. Because it's been weird for me being over here for so long, and I call France France now. It's just because that's all I hear.
Do you say castle now after being in England for so long?
Yeah, I do say castle. Yeah, that's weird. I still say garage, but most say garage.
Oh, do they? Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Did you say sofa?
Dance. But my wife's constantly pulling me up that she doesn't want our son to have an English accent. So she wants me to drive the Australian accent into him. So I've got to.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's going to be rough. You're running against
me. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Just with like him being in England, I think like you'll get that definitely. You know,
I will. But yeah, it'll become a in-house joke though, won't it? Eventually, that'll be fun.
So what do you call it? It's interesting you asked me about Attenborough. Because I was just thinking about him the other day. Because last week was when I was watching that Netflix thing. Yeah. I was watching that Netflix thing, and it was just so obvious, the CGI. But if you're not looking for it, you won't get it. And even taking the obvious CGI out of the question, you really have to wonder how they get this footage anyway.
100%.
To be able to put the cameras in a place where these gorillas are like, that's their home, and not to spook them really too much, because I presume gorillas
you'd almost have to fly it in by drone and let it sit there for a day, 24 hours before you remotely switch it on, you know.
I guess so, hey. Like, you could like pre-plant cameras in known areas where they do it. Like, just to think about the logistics of that kind of thing is huge. But it is interesting. I watched this guy on YouTube. He's Japanese and he's a skin diver, and the footage that he gets is like, you can tell it's real. Like, it's not like amazingly spectacular when it comes to the actual animals themselves, like, well, fish technically, but he's spear fishing, so like you get to see, I don't know, the animals up close when he's like killed them or like speared them, but the real amazing parts of the footage are the fact like when he dives into the ocean and you can see everything in there, like it's close to like what you would see with your eyes, but actually seeing the animals up close and making a narrative about it, you couldn't do it the way that he's doing it. You would need incredible zoom function. You would need someone editing to the shit house, like everything, making a moving picture rather than just like footage straight off the bat. And I'm sure this guy does do a bit of editing, but it's very different from what you see in these nature documentaries, like, for sure.
I mean, I'm sure if you go back and watch some of it now, especially in the last 10 years, you, like you said, you'll probably pull up well over half of it being CGI, you know, just made up footage, animation.
For sure. Yeah. Or like, I think I was talking to Ab about this a while ago, but there's a documentary maker called Werner Herzog.
I've seen a bit of his stuff.
He's very, very well known. And, I still hold him in high regard, but one of the, he did a documentary on capital punishment, and, a lot of the interviews were green screen. screen. And, you know, that's not extraordinary, but, looking back on it, I was like, wow, I always thought this guy was like about authenticity and that kind of thing. And I was, it's just like, it's such a bad green screen. It's just obvious now. I was like,
did you see the one he did in Australia where it was like an Aboriginal community?
Yeah, that's like one of the good ones, right? Like it's from a while.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. About the, the ants. They're wanting
the ants.
That's where the green ants dream.
Yeah. I can't remember the actual story, but that stuff from back then, that's when like he's kind of getting into David Attenborough territory now, where like his narration voice is like everyone like if you're a bit more avant-garde, you don't like Attenborough, you like Werner Herzog, who has a message to his documentaries, whereas Attenborough's message is like for grade schoolers kind of thing.
Sure, but it's potentially similar propaganda being sold to two different demographics as well.
It totally is. Yeah. Like if you look at his Capital Punishment one, I mean, he's very much anti-capital punishment in it, and but he says that he's coming from a neutral perspective, like through the film, and it's just like you're such an obvious like propaganda machine. And you know what, man? Speaking of propaganda, I'm kind of like just getting into it now and just kind of talking. But South Park, I'm so sick of those guys. Like,
I had someone send me one of the latest things they did, and he was upping it. He was saying, look, they're pointing this out, they're telling the truth. And I haven't watched it yet, but interesting. But go on, I want to hear what you've got to say.
Oh, no, like, what do you call it? He's, it's all about COVID now, all their stuff. Right. And I, for the longest time, have just always rejected them for being total propaganda. But now it's like, I saw one and it was like, Cartman is an anti-vaxxer and his mum is like the anti-vaxxer parent, like slash Karen. And I was just like so offended by it. I didn't even finish it. But it's interesting like how them and The Simpsons have kind of gone for like a similar angle where they turn your average Westerner into just a total dumbass with like dumbass kids and all that kind of thing. I've always felt that anyway about The Simpsons. It's like, you know, Homer doesn't even know that bacon is from the same animal as pork, as ham or whatever. That's always one that people kind of tout. It comes from the bacon animal. It's like, yeah, you know, there are people like that in our society, but I think we really should be more careful with what goes on our TV if they're going to be displaying kind of like microcosms of our society as that, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I've had people telling me to watch South Park my whole life, and yeah, I caught bits here and there, and I suppose originally it was quite funny back in the day just because it was new, it was fresh, there was nothing like it. But yeah, as you can see as it goes on, there's to be that strong for that long, you're clearly, you know, telling the right part of the story that they, you know, they're okay with.
Yeah. I think they even did like the Caitlyn Jenner thing, and PC, they had this PC character in the school and that kind of thing. So they always come from like an angle of how ridiculous stuff is.
Which is, I think, why a lot of people, I know a lot of people into, you know, conspiracy stuff and truth stuff that are a big fan of South Park because of that, you know, they feel that, they're telling us, you know, telling us how it is, they're giving us hints, blah, 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 but it's...
Like they still manage to, I think I know what you're saying, they still manage to reinforce the mainstream message somehow anyway. And I mean,
talking about it, why even bringing it up, you're reinforcing it.
I know, totally. Yeah. You know, so I mean, as soon as I saw this little recommendation on YouTube for, it was like post-COVID South Park or something like that, I was like, man, these guys are so lame. I've had enough of their crap. So I put in a comment saying that South Park's just been propaganda for a long time now. And there was like immediately like just likes up, like heaps of likes on the comment. I mean, people are fully aware of it.
But
I think you're kind of onto something there where South Park kind of grabs people who are like just in the conspiracy pond. Yeah. Like they got their
that guardrail sort of approach.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And they're so edgy as well. Don't you just hate that? Like, they're right on the cusp all the time, you know? They're so relevant.
So it's almost like they've got a copy of the script.
Yeah, or they can just feel which way it's going as well. I mean, And when back in our day, like as in, feels funny saying that, but when we were in high school, South Park was put on the government's kind of like unofficial propaganda channel of SBS. So like, exactly. They kind of like, the Australian government brought
this kind of like foreign programming, you know, more or less like The Simpsons, which like
Gateway.
Yeah, at the time it was like, it was unbelievably crass. And there was just like callous swearing going on, right? Like, you know, presented to children and stuff. And my parents were always very anti-swearing, and they're not anymore. Like, you can say whatever you want around my folks now, but like, at the time, Scott Park was like breaking that hold, I think, in Australia, and maybe even in America, possibly more so there.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. What do you think about SBS?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because I think it was said before, maybe off air, but it's like secondary, the main government program in Australia TV is ABC, but, there was always a second one, which my memory of it was that it was more of a community, public airtime sort of channel.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be kind of different in every region. It would have almost like a different local approach in every region of Australia. That was my memory of it as a beginning, but then, it did become sort of national and more governmental. And it went from, world movies and art movies and travel sort of stuff to, starting to introduce a lot of this sort of Marxist approach and the green approach and all that. It, very quickly took that shift and it suddenly seemed like it had infinite funding, just like the ABC, where previously it felt like it was a very budget thing.
But they're very worldly now, aren't they? I'd be fine.
Well, again, it's kind of like the gateway, wasn't it? It was like I suppose every country probably had this, like you said before, like this avant-garde approach to catching a few that are on the outskirts, you know, staring over the fence kind of thing. And after this.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I sent you a picture of the current CEO of the ABC, and the Wikipedia page had a picture of her sitting next to Klaus Schwab. I was like, of course, you know, at the World Economic Forum. But I mean, Australian.
But it just seems that we're getting that left, right, and center at the moment. Like, as soon as you look for, you know, who's the head of this, and then all of a sudden, they're sitting next to a character like Klaus Schwab. It almost feels like it's fucking set up that way, you know? So when you go looking, you find this common thread and it becomes the new, you know, angle to take. But I'm sure there's layers and layers to this sort of setup.
Oh, for sure. And it's like, I mean, I know that most Australians it doesn't really bother them that the people who run their official media company are globalists who actually live overseas, you know? Like, I don't know. I would kind of think it's like a requirement of the CEO of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation to be firmly planted here. You know, like that they would, if they needed people to represent them, they would delegate people to go overseas and represent them. But to actually live there in Singapore, you know, like...
Mm.
I guess like the globalist hub of this oceanic part of the world. We've got this kind of like, I wouldn't consider the ABC to be like a hydra, right? As we've mentioned before, like it's more like it's just a monolith, and it has all these little babies underneath it. They're not 100% funded by them, and they've got some funding from private sources. So like they're kind of like just little spin-offs. And that kind of thing.
It's kind of like the idea of lobbying behind something, isn't it?
Mm. So I remember there was a great program on ABC called Media Watch. I'm not sure if it's still there.
Yeah, I remember that. I used to watch it a lot.
Yeah, and I'm not sure really now whether I would have the same kind of like gold lining kind of view on Media Watch. But at the time when it was in its heyday somewhat, I remember thinking like how diligent they were, because they'd come on the attack towards their own channel quite a bit, and one of the reports that they did was how Triple J, which is a radio, for those who don't know, it's just a radio program aimed at like kind of younger, more hip kind of programming, music wise, culturally wise, university age. That's a good way of putting it. And they're wholly funded by the Australian government, and they were promoting Converse shoes, like advertising for Converse on their channel. well.
Culture
and media,
creation.
Mm, yeah, and Media Watch took them to town to some extent. I remember thinking, like, yeah, this is pretty awesome that they're taking them to town. But at the same time, it's like people at Triple J know that they're funded wholly by the government. So how is this even slipping through the crack that they advertise something? Like, isn't that just like straight up against some kind of, it's not even a clause. It's like, yeah, we don't advertise on this channel commercial products because we are a state-owned business. But
But that's when you're more likely to be sold propaganda through those avenues mm-hmm. than you are, yeah, commercial products.
You are, but like, this is the thing, right? Is it's like, is Media Watch, I don't even know, intentionally or unintentionally at this point, just making it kind of that they're making it kind of acceptable by way of showing you the hypocrisy in Triple J doing this, and the general public might be saying, well, I think it is fair that they do a little bit of advertising here and there. You know what I mean? Like, they've kind of
yeah, but given, then you've got like the you know, they're watching over their own propaganda, aren't they? So it's like they're controlling the narrative of who's questioning the news. So if you are questioning a certain, you know, certain aspect of it, and then you go to watch Media Watch, you're being given a narrative, you know, from the same people that have created the thing that they're analyzing. You know what I mean? So it's
oh yeah, big time. You know, and it's like when they broadcast something like something as blatantly disregarding their ethos as one of their radio stations advertising commercial products, like I think that they are more or less putting it into the foray, but that is possibly acceptable now. You know, it's like, oh, it isn't acceptable, but we're talking about it and we're giving it airtime, where in reality they just should have been an in-house investigation, like shutting that down. You know, maybe the public does need to know on some level that ABC dealt with it, but like to put like this emotional spin on it and stuff, because it was like that as well. Good program, Media Watch. Not sure if it's still on.
Well, I have no idea.
Yeah. What is the BBC like? I know you probably don't watch or hear about it.
No, I mean, exactly that. I haven't owned television for about 15 years, but it's people. I think people in England see the BBC more as their authority, like their government, than they do the actual government. That's the impression I get.
Mm.
It seems to sway more. It has more control over the hearts and minds of people here than the government does at all. Even though they're just two branches of the same thing. But
yeah.
But people love to see it as like the official authority. They just love it. They're so proud of it. So many people. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I remember this makes me think, because I went to my in-law's house and my father-in-law was watching. I got a feeling it was like National Geographic. It's something where like the watermark down the bottom was National Geographic or Nova or something like that. And he was like, you see that? He's like, that means it's real. And I don't even know.
It's got the official stamp.
Yeah, I don't even know if he was taking the piss or something like that. And but I just, it's always something that sticks in my head. It's like, yeah, I guess, you know, it carries the official title of being real. So what does it mean for other, if it's got a 10 News or a something overseas to that equivalent on it, I guess it's just, it's media, you know. Whereas, like, you look at these Attenborough stuff, people take it at face value as being completely real, and it kind of promotes this animals are superior to us worldview, I guess you could say. I've always felt that when I talk people about. I can't remember what Attenborough documentary was, landmark one. It might have been called Planet Earth or something like that. But I was always
I remember my old man being stoked that he got the Blu-ray version of it, and he couldn't wait to show us on the new telly. Blue Planet on Blu-ray. Yep. Come on, kids.
Blue Planet, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. You know, or like, helicopter. But there are times where, you know, I do get that when people are like, man, this is going to be an experience, you know, and I think I would have been 21, maybe younger, and I had this friend that I made friends with, this guy when I was like 18. I worked with him, and his parents were very avant-garde, if you know what I mean by the term. Just like super, So he had a, 12.1 surround system thing, like kind of like in the lounge room, and it was a very quaint lounge room. It wasn't purpose-built as a cinema. He just had this setup, which was good. And he said, oh, have you seen 2001 A Space Odyssey? And I was like, no, I haven't seen it. And he chucks it on and he pauses it and he was like, no, Phil, you know, you should sit here. This is the spot to to fully get this movie, you know. So he's like, this is where all the sound comes in and stuff. But I sat and watched that, and I remember being, it's quite a good movie, you know. Like, I don't agree with it. Its mindset and all the kind of themes and that kind of thing, but in terms of a moving picture being complete in a sense that is sort of like your penultimate kind of picture, a Kubrick film.
Better than the moon landings and filmed at the same time.
Dude, the moon. Oh, I think we've talked about the moon landings before. It's just such a joke. And
I remember as a child looking at that footage and seeing like when it would show like an image of an astronaut walking down the ladder and the camera focused on its body sort of thing. But then you could see the shape of objects behind him, like it was like a hologram type thing. And I remember seeing that as a child, just going, "That looks a bit weird."
Yeah, it's so obvious as well, isn't it? And we now know that it's just 1960s special effects of front screen projection, I think they call it. And that's why you're seeing the background on the astronaut. It's just it's really cool that they've been able to do that. But the moon landings, oh god. And I used to be really into space, so I'd watch I used to have on in the background when I had my PC hooked up to my computer around the 2011 stage, and I'd have the moon landing in its entirety just playing in the background. And and I just remember being NASA amazing. Geek. Full NASA geek, and I just remember thinking like, it's just incredible that they're on the moon. Like, it's just and everyone who'd come into my house, they'd be like, "Oh, it's the moon landing." You should be as fascinated as I am, and most people would be like, "Oh, yeah, meh." But and then as well, I got carried away with all these terms. Yeah, at the beginning of this recording, you were talking about the terms that people gravitate to, and one of them is Spaceship Earth. You know, I was just fascinated by this idea of Spaceship Earth, like the fact that we are a spaceship. I don't think that now, but I remember just being one of the things. Was just like, wow, this is.
Oh, I think that sort of thing was embedded from Star Wars, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Like Star Trek, I guess you could say. And it's like now we have this kind of. This video, I'm going to send it to you, and I'll make sure Ab gets it as well, but I'm pretty sure he just put stuff onto Fake YouTube from this channel anyway, but like, Jeff Bezos was talking, not at the start of this video, but at some point in the video, and they were talking about those off-world colonies where they have artificial gravity, and he was saying one of the highlights of these places was that you can use as much energy as you want, you know, we're going to have rivers, we're going to have forests, you know, so it's one of these, and Earth's going to be like a little holiday resort that we can't destroy. And as much as like this thinking is just totally up there in the clouds, and it's not going to happen at all. Like realistically, probably the real message is that's like their kind of religion, you know, their religion is technology and being able to use it, on an infinite scale, and that's their heaven, you know, which is, a very disappointing aspect. Oh, not aspect, but it's a disappointing heaven from my perspective as a Christian, as a Catholic. Like, it's a very, their kind of heaven is a very carnal place, where an adult fairy, adult wonderland in a sense. I didn't look too hard into Islam, but like, this is my understanding of Islamic heaven as well. They're very, rivers of honey, you know, there's all this kind of like waxing poetic kind of language, but a very underdeveloped kind of view of the spirit and the soul. Whereas if you look at, say, Catholicism or Christianity, just in general, heaven is what they call the beatific vision. It's where you are reunited with God, you know. So it's like not about, it's not about sex. It's not about gluttony. It's not about this world so much so as it is about like becoming reunited with God, with your maker. So I tend to view this like scientific materialist kind of worldview as just, it's so subpar when it comes to the spirit. So quite a bit about how the vaccine is the injectable communion wafer. I don't really like the term, but it fits. When I realized that, like the concept, and if you look, say, for instance, this is getting a little bit far out, but if you look at like the Jewish concept of heaven, the concept is only for the chosen people. So, I mean, that as well, also, I can just, you know, disregard, definitely, just on that basis alone. But, yeah, so I think that's kind of like what's missing, from this kind of new worldview is just like a hope and being something more than I am now, which is, I enjoy Earth, you know, and everything that happens here on some level, but, you know, the spirit must go somewhere that, is beyond, that kind of, yeah, I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, no, sure. You were saying, but that's an interesting thing for, like, say, the Jewish culture to be told that, you know, you are the chosen one. So it's like, no matter how you behave in this reality and in this lifetime, it doesn't matter, you're the chosen one. So it kind of gives a free ride, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. You know, there's no, I think there is a concept of hell and that kind of thing, but it doesn't, but the concept of heaven only really applies to them, so to speak. And we're talking really like a very small kind of like contingency of Judaism as well. I think anyway, yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, without getting into too much of that, yeah, that's kind of like what boils it down for me as well, is it's just like, yeah, the Jewish religion is one of inclusivity, whereas Christianity is one of, the other way around, exclusivity and then inclusivity for Christianity.
I was going to say, we having your own revelation then.
And yeah, so I mean, and then you look at these space religions, and they're not quite. They really are. They get about a 6 out of 10 for trying to some extent, but in terms of you know, they don't really have like a life affirming property when it comes to humans.
Would you like to support Fakeologist.com and all the content we're creating? We operate on the value for value principle, where you pay whatever you can for whatever value you feel you've received. We accept donations in almost every form, from PayPal to Bitcoin. Please go to fakeologist.com/donate for your payment options. Thank you for your support. It's a
rich man's world. Yep.
But then you just need to claim your riches.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and if you have a Bitcoin server that you don't know the password for, I'm sorry.
what's your take on the whole Bitcoin crypto thing?
Well, I'll be interested to read the new Miles Mathers take on it. Not sure whether I'll agree with it 100%. He thinks it's money laundering. But my opinion is that you've got Bitcoin right. And I understand the concept of you have an algorithm with so much Bitcoins within that algorithm.
This is where I pull people up every time at the beginning of when they explain, not you, but others as well, that are like,
yeah.
And use it, is that that's one of the first things that's explained to me, that, you know, behind this algorithm, and there's only a certain amount. I'm like, but I have to pull them up every time and go, yeah, but what algorithm? Where's that algorithm come from?
Yeah.
Where's this faith in the whole thing come from in the first place? I can't get past that point yet, and I keep trying to draw it back to that, and I've never had a satisfying answer.
Yeah, I know, and I was kind of going to just outline my issues with that as well. Like, you've got this algorithm, apparently, and it's like, I think people find legitimacy in it to some extent because of the way that money operates in the fiat or by decree money system that we're in now, which is decreed by government.
Sure. I'll interject there, because that's often the next thing that's brought up. That's often the next thing that's brought up after that, is the difference between the current fiat currency and this new model. But my understanding of the current system is that it's completely fictional anyway. So,
well, yeah.
When I hear fiat addressed to the current money system, it doesn't ring true for me, because I feel that they're literally at a point where they just get on TV and say the word trillion, and then the spell's being cast that trillion actually has value, and they've just spent that on a certain thing that they've just sold you. And it's like, I just don't feel that there's any legitimacy to the current system anyway for it to even be finite, if you know what I mean.
Yep. And I think, man, that's exactly why people have faith in cryptocurrency, because the current model is just as illusory as Bitcoin is when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, you know.
Well, it's a similar thing, because it's still relying on the core aspect of, you've got faith in something. You're choosing to believe that something has a certain value. You can't the only thing that you can physically prove has value is the things you have in front of you, the objects and the space you occupy, the people you're with, the land you're on. There's value in that, but everything else is just completely abstract and subjective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, imagine Bitcoin, like the value of it was actually related to how many Bitcoins were quote unquote left, you know? It's like, I'm sure that plays some part, but from what I can gather anyway, it seems to be just like, as influenced as like what a regular stock would be, or if you were trading currencies. I mean, is it really?
Well, still seems like it's built on an illusion of supply and demand as well.
Mm-hmm. All over an algorithm. So
an algorithm.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I mean, in my mind anyway, government and fiat currency maybe is just because we use it as our main currency is more tangible, right? If you forget about the nuts and bolts. But when you're thinking about something like a mathematical formula, it's like, I don't know, but that for me, even by itself, is like just a illusory kind of concept. How could something of value be within
that? Yeah. And that's another question I ask. I just go, what value are you actually talking about? So where's the initial injection of value placed into this whole story? Like, it's trying to, you know what I mean? Like, the idea of exchanging currency or exchanging anything is we exchange things based on the faith and the value of it. You know what I mean? So it's, I don't even know where that comes from. It's
Well, I mean, it could be just strictly put up to how much interest is in it. I've always
supply and demand once again.
Yeah, like just how much people are focused in on it stuff. And I mean, I think it was early this year. People that I was working with, I think eight out of 10, 1 week just decided to start buying cryptocurrency. Like it followed suit with the Elon Musk promotion of his own coin and cryptocurrency in general. And I shit you not, 8 out of 10 people had, you know, spent a pay packet, 1 week's pay packet within there at the very least of cryptocurrency, with most of them losing most of it, from what I can tell as well, you know, especially if they went into these ones which weren't the premium ones, quote unquote premium, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, so I mean, Mathis says it's money laundering. I mean, my father-in-law is very up to date with this kind of stuff, and if he's not investing in it, I mean, there's no way I'm going to. And his right. ultimate is that cryptocurrency is a dead end right now. So whatever his feeling is about, like, the rationale that brought him to that stage, whatever, I'm comfortable with that. But when it comes to my opinion about it, I had a look at them, and there was just something so like fraudulent about it.
Yeah.
Like, as I was looking into it, I was like, I'm just going to invest in stocks, you know? Like, it's
kind of
funny.
Reminded me of, like, being sold the idea of, like, joining some Amway system.
What is that? Remember again? That?
It was kind of like a scheme going around, which it probably still does, where like you get brought into the idea, you know, someone sells you the idea of, you know, come, we'll sell a certain amount of products to you, and you'll get them for a certain price, and you sell a certain amount of those products to other people. The more people you start selling products to, the more people you've got under you, therefore you start to get more of a cut of the profit from above. It's kind of like, you know, they call it like a pyramid scheme sort of thing, but.
Okay.
I'm not saying Bitcoin sounds like that at all. I'm just saying it just kind of reminded me at the beginning as well of like, yeah, you're kind of being sold this idea of, you know, if you just get a little bit of this, it, you know, the value of it will be, yeah, something more down the line kind of thing, which.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it looked like a house of cards when I was looking into it. Oh, I need a wallet. Oh, okay. What can I spend Bitcoin on? I mean, not really much.
The only value in it at the moment seems the people that I know of that just do the quick ins and outs. So they'll, you know, invest a bit of real currency into a certain coin, and then a certain time sell it off, buy a different coin, and then that turns into, and then withdraw that money. So he goes, you know, he's just doubled his money in 2 weeks and he's happy about it. I see that, but then I just see that as a form of gambling, you know, it's like you're just on the game.
Yeah, it's not really like short selling, but the whole way you're doing it is kind of shorting or whatever that phrase is. I'm just applying it to that. Yeah, where it's gambling at the end of the day. And then you've got a contingency of Bitcoin people that they just hold on to it as well, so they're in the long game, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I mean, most of the YouTubers I listened to from 2010 onwards were all about Bitcoin, right? And, you know, UJ Dyers and JF Gareffi and that kind of thing. I don't know, like, if you just say you had 3 Bitcoin back in 2012 when it was sitting at, like, what, $20 or something like that. I mean, I would have cashed out by this age. I don't have that much willpower, like, in a product that is essentially, like, just imaginary, like, more imaginary than government fiat currency. Like, you know, as soon as it hit, like, probably 2000, 10,000, I probably would have left. So, I mean, my feeling now is that, like, the majority of Bitcoin must be held up by companies like Tesla and Pony, you know. I know that they make more money off Bitcoin than they do off selling cars, you know.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm, like, interested in reading Mathis's article and, you know, really kind of seeing the money laundering thing. But then, of course, why are they laundering money, you know? Laundering money usually indicates that there is, like, a criminal activity being, they're getting money. Someone's getting money from a criminal activity that they need to legitimize, is the usual. So, yeah. Is it the new cash? You know what I mean?
The other thing. Then I get sold the idea of it's, you know, completely anonymous. And it's just like, mate, there's nothing more anonymous than me shaking your hand and handing you a £10 note and us saying deal done. There's nothing more anonymous than that. It's, I know you feel that you're using their fiat currency and you shouldn't be doing that. That's kind of besides the point. I'm just saying that actual transaction between you and I, no matter what we're using, that is completely anonymous.
Yeah. Like it cannot be traced, really. Like, and I mean, when you get to, like, say, you know, thousands of dollars, that transaction was a lot of money. I mean, maybe then because of the laws that are in place. But from my understanding, Bitcoin is not 100% anonymous. You know, like that also is an illusion, you know, but when what you're talking about, say I buy, you know, a high end computer off you or something for $3,000 or something. I mean, like, yeah, that transaction, you're not paying tax. That's 100% certain, unless you put it into a bank account or, notify the government that you did this transaction, you know? So, I don't know. I often wonder how much of a problem cash really is for a government anyway. Like, I tend to find that your businesses, like a bakery or a hairdresser, around here in Australia, like, a lot of them they'll give you a haircut and you can give them the cash and they won't register it in their till anyway because, it's kind of like, tipping, isn't it? You know, like I'm pretty sure taxes aren't taken away off tips in the States. Now, I could be wrong about that, but it's like tips aren't taxed. I think they are. Anyway, I'm speaking out of hand there. But like, it's kind of like it's a way of boosting your income. So like, I'm not even sure like how much of a problem it is to the government because they allow it to happen anyway to some extent, you know?
Yeah,
Do you 100% there's a way to make people pay tax for cash transactions? Like, if there's a way to do it, there is, you know.
Yeah, they just rely on the honest, you know, honesty system. But
honesty, yeah, exactly. There could be that. There could be, like, an actual tax man going around and making sure that you are doing the right thing. But, yeah.
But even, like, there's more, the council is more of a threat here trying to get your money than the government is for tax. So you'll receive constant reminders and letters and emails and whatnot and threats from the council about paying their monthly council rates for almost nothing as well. But yeah, there's more of a threat coming from there than there is a government paying your income tax. I went years in the UK without paying any income tax. Just didn't even tell them. I just started working, had a bank account. No one knew nothing, you know. So it's very, very, very easy. But when it comes to the council, they're all over it.
Oh yeah, yep, yeah. Because I'm pretty sure I did hear someone say that your rates in America were to pay for the public school system, and it wouldn't surprise me if that is the case here as well, you know, like the teachers are paid through rates. You know, it might be a federal thing here, but, you know, there has to be some, like money that is a guarantee coming from people. But it's interesting, isn't that? So it's like rates are essentially a guarantee to some extent for the government or local government in like what they're getting. But the rates, you don't pay less rates, you know, that's what it is. You pay that and we're going to make this much money this year from yada yada, number of houses and number of properties and that kind of thing that we have. So it's like a guarantee. So it's controlled on the local level, isn't it? Whereas like cash transactions, you know, it's one of those things where it's maybe too much effort to do that anyway. But when you have people under the thumb paying rates anyway, and there's no way out of it, yeah, there you go, you know. I mean, but back to Bitcoin, it's like, I kind of treat it like Uber. I mean, you have this thing, this entity called Uber and Bitcoin that have just been allowed to operate in this country. And from what I can gather in most, maybe China being an exception, but you know, you have this foreign international entity just invading your country and undercutting the value of people who are living there and what they do, you know. Because but when Uber first came out, I remember I spoke to a taxi driver and he was like, this is just communism, you know. I paid 50 grand for my taxi registration and now it's worth 2.5 grand, you know. And it's just the government has just said that and allowed something like Uber to to dominate this market, you know, without even, I don't know, any real kind of buy-in. You know, they've come to the poker table and they haven't bought in, and they have the biggest stack there and they can bet as much as they want, pretty much. The rules don't apply to them. And I'm not sure where I was going with that, but that seems, yeah, that's right. So I went to a restaurant up here and to get some takeaway. And I'm like, you guys, oh, you spoke to Uber, you know? And he was like, yeah, I mean, Uber takes, what is it called? Uber Foods, Uber Delivery, Uber Eats. Yeah. So, got a brain fart there. And, so Uber takes a percentage of cut from the restaurant as well. Now, this isn't really like super groundbreaking, revealing information. But at the time, I remember being like, wow, like how much is that? And it was something in the order of 3 to 5%. And
100%. Because I've never used any of those services myself. And, you know, I'll often find you could go on to, say, a website like Deliveroo or Uber Eats or Just Eat or whatnot. And there'll be a certain price list for a restaurant there that you're ordering from. But if you straight away go and see if that place has got a website and a phone number, and you call them and you ask them, you know, if they deliver or can you collect or whatever, you'll find you'll get 20% cheaper just by going straight to them. And they're completely grateful the fact that you've gone to that effort, because they're going to get all the money.
Yeah, yeah. You know what, man? Now it's almost double the price here, you know. So I...
Hi, this is Matthew.
This is Maria Lakita.
Mark Manuel.
This is OBF.
Noise level. Polly Wilson.
You're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.
Hey, guys. Nice time to break in during a break.
There you go.
Hey. Hey,
that's what they're there for.
That's what they're there to bust up the conversation. Yeah. Uber is an interesting company for sure. I'm now starting to think that it was brought in to help facilitate the Great Reset. I think they did it a few years early to get that one going, but it cleared out an entire cash-only business, which is the taxi business worldwide. And I think it has, because they're using cutting-edge technology, where maybe the taxi business, the small taxi businesses were not, because they probably couldn't even afford to hire or wanted to hire a developer. I just think it was one way to get rid of cash and bring that business into the digital sphere. And also,
that's all a part of that agenda.
In future, it's going to limit who can ride it, because it'll all be tied up to your digital ID. So if you've been a bad boy, you ain't getting a ride.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, you know, for here, like I was just saying to Bibi, there's like, I've still got the option to go to the restaurant and pick up the food, or, you know, flag a taxi down on the side of the street and jump in with him and pay him cash.
We all have the option.
Yeah, so
but
it's about supporting
them. Yeah, people like you have an altruistic view of things. The average person just doesn't want to get off the couch. So, yeah, you might be one in 20 or even less people that are looking to support local business and let them have a bigger cut. The rest of the people are ordering McDonald's using Uber, which is the craziest thing I have ever heard. But they're ordering fast food using Uber, McDonald's and other burger joints.
See, here as well, you've got Deliveroo, which is another one. And, yeah, they deliver food from restaurants to people's homes and that. But most of the time, the people ordering it, that's class kind of, you know, Marxist thinking, left-leaning sort of hipster that is sitting there probably tapping away at a laptop, blah, 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 for work, and then ordering in from Deliveroo and thinking that, you know, on some sort of high horse. But 9 times out of 10, that Deliveroo has been delivered from someone from from Southern Europe or whatever, on a really, really tight wage, riding a bicycle uphill in the rain to get the food to you. And it's just really a part of that sort of class thing too over here.
Deliveroo, that sounds like an Australian service.
Yeah, it started here.
Yeah, I've heard the story that it was an Australian guy in New York that started it.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That makes more sense.
Well, you just see the poor guys and girls riding their bikes in the rain, uphill, late at night, just, you know, to deliver a hamburger to some lazy fucker, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to say that. It's, like, so fat and lazy as well.
Yeah.
You know. Like, yeah. And then I was
that poor guy in a bike is at least getting a workout and making something as opposed to nothing. So I don't really think he's a poor guy in a bike. I used to work with bikers in courier business. The guys I felt badly for are the ones that worked in the winter in a foot of snow, but they still rode their bike. I don't know how they did it.
That's what I mean, yeah, it's more that thing.
Those are warriors, but the average person would not do that.
No. I think sometime last year I was at a bucks party and it was for a young guy, a relative, and most of the people there were 18, 20, and they all called up their parents to call an Uber for them.
Wow.
So they'd get their parents to, you know, do the Uber for them on their Uber app.
Wow.
I remember just thinking like, yeah, that is so, like painful.
I think all those Stanford people are slowly working their way into power, and that's why we're in the mess we're in.
The damage that would be having on, you know, small restaurants that used to rely on having, you know, full tables most evenings during the week, that, you know, so many people aren't doing that now. But we went out for I took the wife and the son out for a pizza the other night, this little Italian joint discovered nearby. And, you know, they got the whole of the wood fire oven going, and, you know, it's very traditional, proper Italians there, making great pizza, you know, good price, all that sort of thing. And my son, you know, then getting the experience of looking at the fire in the oven and seeing the man turn the dough and making his dinner for him and putting it in the oven. We're the only ones in the restaurant. No one else there. It was very sad to see, yet we were having that experience ourselves.
Oh, yeah. How was the takeout counter? Was it busy?
I saw one Deliveroo guy walk in. That was it.
So they weren't even busy on that end.
Nah, true.
They just wasn't busy. Yeah, I know. I'm listening to Clown Planet News. You guys should consider listening to that. That's Steve Census Fidelium, really good aggregator of the COVIDian cult news. And he was just talking. He plays a lot of creators that I like Dave Cullen, you know, Rollo's favorite, and they really are putting they really want everything to go into the digital world. They're very serious about that. This is not science fiction. They really don't want people to go out and do anything. They just
That's what ties into the whole Bitcoin thing we're talking about earlier. It's just that's a further push into that whole digitalizing of everything.
Yeah, they want people to live local, but then on an international system.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like they can deal. They can deal with you physically locally, but mentally you're like globally. That's part of the trick.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like this multinational. You're using its service, but you're not allowed to go to where it lives without paying a high price for that or something like that. Like, this kind of what's that movie where they're on the train kind of thing? Snowpiercer. It rings so much of that kind of, we only have sushi one time a year because we've killed the oceans and blah blah. Kind of. I've got to go now, fellas. Anyway, it was good speaking to you, Ab, and also Sean.
Yeah, man, absolutely, always pleasure.
Yeah, nice to talk to you again, baby. Are you coming on the Australian Roundtable later on?
Yeah, I think I might tonight.
Well, that's great.
There you go.
Well, Rick and Rollo, they start actually a little too early for me now. I don't even think it's evening in Australia when they start, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think
By the way, there was one a few weeks back where Rollo sat back and played producer, and I feel like it was he's missed his calling there. I think he was very good at that, letting you, yourself and Rick chat along.
Yeah, he was pretty good. Yeah, he was hitting a few marks with the audio. I enjoyed it. That was good. He had some decent music. He was even cut it now and then. I see Babette and an ounce of pepper in the group.
I'm just waiting to go to the beach, Ab.
What's at the beach?
Salt.
Right.
Oh, it's a bit of the beach where I go to, where we're about to go to, is really beautiful. A place called Point
Addis. Where about you, Frank?
A place called Point Addis.
Yes, I know of that. Yeah, nice.
Do you need a quack sport for that?
I've got no idea.
Well, you'll find out.
I just don't ask questions I don't want to know the answer to, Ab.
That's a smart move.
Yeah, I agree. I live that way.
Do you have a Bunnings update?
I haven't. I do click and collect to get my stuff at the moment. I sent a letter to the Human Rights Commission.
Right.
And they told me that it was out of their jurisdiction. If it was because I was stopped because I was trans, then they could do something about it.
Yeah, that's true. You're trans vaccinated, aren't you?
Well, I am vaccinated. I had all the vaccines. I had smallpox and tetanus and who knows what damage has been done to me, as they say.
You're not lying if you say you're vaccinated.
No, so I do say I'm vaccinated.
I read somewhere that someone was saying that smallpox was bed bugs. Bed bug bites. I just quickly looked at it. I didn't finish it, but I guess the damage would line up perfectly. Little pock marks on your body from bed bugs. They do look... I've never read that. I never got to the bottom, and I just read the headline on that one. Have you heard that before?
I haven't, but it sounds plausible. Well, Walter Beith's latest missive is excellent, Ab. You will really enjoy it.
Yeah, send me a link, because I'm just overwhelmed with content. I don't know where to go, but I'll listen. What did you like about it?
Oh, his whole description of the... first of all, he talks about what's going on and the madness of it, but the second half of the talk is really about the health message, which you would like anyway, since he's a plant-based diet guy.
Yeah.
But he also talks about Beauchamp versus...
He talks
about terrain theory, and he does it because he's actually a... he trained in that field. His PhD is actually in biomedical science.
Okay.
He really does a great job on the discussion about Beauchamp versus Pasteur.
If you can drop a link, that would help. But I'll look on his channel. I know he's on Rumble.
Rumble's the one I looked up.
Yeah, I'll look him up. I'll look him up for sure. Sounds good. Sounds fantastic.
That sounds good.
He is. You know, the way he speaks, I just find so, you know, very thoughtful.
I have to say, I do prefer the Afrikaans accent over the Australian accent.
Yes,
really?
Very exotic.
Yeah, it is, yeah. South Africa. Plus, they are the most Christian of the colonies, without a doubt.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
My brother was telling me this morning that he's got himself a fake digital pass on his phone now. Mainly due for work, because he kind of lost the work he had, but then convinced the guy he was working for to, you know, have him back on board. And they'll sort it out down the line, sort of thing. And, but you know, he needs to pick up materials on the way to work and all that. So he was trying to get a Bunnings and things like that, and he wasn't able to. So yeah, he ended up finding somewhere on the internet a way to have a QR code on your phone. It's not even through the government website either. It's more or less just a PDF with a QR code on it, and he's able to just hold that up and get in where he needs to.
Well, that's going to work until the database is live, I would presume. I'm not against doing that. The only real drawback is that just delays the inevitable.
Sure. He's aware of that as well. Yeah, he's well aware of that, but he's just doing it because he needs to, you know, immediately work, sort of thing.
Yeah, it is a decision about whether you want to just keep supporting this nonsense or
You're pushing the can down the road. Yeah, you're sacrificing the long term for immediacy, which of course is the big problem that all of society has always had. You just borrow more money and just throw it into the future, because the people now will not suffer in the future, but their children will. So it's
What do you mean by borrow more money?
Well, we go further into debt to sustain our Ponzi scheme now.
Who's we go further into debt?
We the people of the day.
But none of us. When you say we, you're talking about governments creating money and placing us in debt. Because if a government is creating money, no debt is created.
Well, debt is created. Yeah, but they go to the World Bank, banksters, to get the money. So no government creates its own money, I don't think. They just go to the World Bank to get more money.
Well, they create debt via us, so we're their debtors.
The security for the debt. We're still the debt. Sure.
But the point I'm making is creating money, the idea that we are doing it, I'm not doing it, you're not doing it. It's a criminal activity that's being undertaken that really, you know...
It's being undertaken in your name.
But the further point I'm going to make here is, well, it's not undertaken in my good name at all, because that's the other fallacy, is it? It's done on the basis of every aspect of this thing is meaningless if you understand how it's set up. You know, you and I are not responsible for it. You and I can walk away from that. In fact, it's the easiest
thing. But then we have to walk away from the whole system that we're part of.
So they're using your person within that system. But but I suppose the fear of escaping that is that you're leaving your person behind and all the benefits that come with it.
There's only one system right now, Frank, and you're in it.
No, there is two systems. The other system is that you go and live a proper life.
Well, who's doing that? Nobody.
I'm going to argue with you that most people are, really, if they think about it. Most people grow food and go and live in the streets and walk around and talk with their friends. That is real life, Ab.
Yeah,
but you're buying from their stores, driving on their roads.
But the actual mechanism by which the stuff is transferred between each other is their system. I'm not arguing. But all of the stuff is still created by us using the benefits from God. You know, none of this can happen without God allowing the sun to shine, the rain to fall. Everything is totally dependent on God, not on the devil.
I don't argue with that.
You're going to get Al mad. He doesn't like when you go all biblical on him.
You know, in the end, people are going to work out a way to do what they've always done. Lots of people have scratched each other's backs, and people can do that now if they wish to. Nothing can stop me giving a tub of salt to this bloke who'll give me some cheese, etc., which is exactly what is happening for me right now, to be honest.
Have you started a new salt currency?
I guess so.
How many pounds for a Bitcoin?
I don't get involved in any of that stuff.
Well, actually, your currency is backed by salt. Why don't you start creating fiat on your pile of salt? That might work. Digital salt.
I do sell salt digitally. We've got our website is quite.
Yeah, but
is a powerful earner.
But make sure I don't want to see any extra digital salt if you don't actually have the salt. So make sure I don't want you to inflate your digital salt. I want to see proof that you have that salt.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com. Wash your hands. We're
off to go to safety land. Yeah, the reason I arc up, Ab, about what you said before is that I think that in many respects, the language is also taking us down the path. I'm going to suggest to you that when every time you say it's their system and all that sort of stuff, that we actually make that more of a fact than it is.
Yeah.
100%.
You know, the facts are that everything that occurs, all the work that gets done by people like me and you. That's the facts.
Right.
And it's relatively simple to, like I said, for people to exchange goods and services. That's a fact.
Yeah, it is.
And it happens much more often than people realize. You know, the amount of stuff that you do now, that you do simply on the basis of a kind of honor system between you and yourself and your friends, would probably be much larger than you realize. Like in my case, a group of us that fix our own cars and do our own work, you know, and help each other out keeping our cars on the road, the amount of, you know, the cost for us to run our cars is a fraction of what most people are paying.
That's true. Wow, what do you do on your own car?
Services or, you know, changing, you know, what are those crazy things, those emission control systems? They are just a total pain in the ring gear.
But what do you do on it?
Well, I know stuff and they know stuff and everyone does different, you know, brings different things to the table on it. Or I've got friends that can source parts or, you know, we've all got different aspects of what we can do.
Yeah, I find it's about...
A friend of mine is quite new Mercedes is... It was playing up, and I had a thing that could read his system, diagnose a fault, we fix a fault, and then, you know, clear the fault and ran the car again. That's, you know, in Mercedes, that's $2,000.
Wow. How much is the computer that you use to diagnose the fault?
$100.
Oh, that's cheap. Because that's one of the things that they don't want anyone to have access to their computer to read the code to fix it. They say it's theirs, and I think that's going to happen in the new digital great reset economy.
Well, that's the great thing about things like Alibaba and eBay is you can buy all those gadgets.
Yeah, for now. That's good.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is about generating your own capital as well, isn't it? So even if you come up with a product or a service and you place a certain value on it that you know you need from it, and then you have an agreement with someone where you're forming a contract that they meet that value, and therefore there's nothing more direct than that alone. And that's more or less outside of their system. That's you. That's how, well, it's using parts of their, I suppose, theirs, but ultimately it's between us, isn't it?
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. Another thing we were doing yesterday was building our own salt smoking machinery. And then, that's a skill that I trade with other people.
Yeah, that's fine.
So, like I keep saying, Ab, in the end, all of the stuff, all the work that occurs because we do it. The example you were given before about Deliveroo and so on really only takes place because people are too lazy, as you said, to get off the couch.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to get off the couch because there's Deliveroo and it's still affordable enough to them to use.
But the only disadvantage for them is that they'll have short, brutal lives, I guess, as they say.
Yeah.
You know, the food they get will make them ill. It's not going to be a lot of, it's not going to be very satisfying sitting at their home watching videos of people surfing when they could be surfing themselves. It's not going to be that great, I guess, if that's what they want.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true what you're saying. Or they'll do it through their Google Glass goggles, etc.
And I always see these things as, that's their loss and our gain.
It's my view, yeah. And I've got no problem with it. The only thing I try and do with my children is set the example of being a person who lives, gets out and does stuff.
Yeah.
That's good.
And so far, my children are very active and don't do any of those things that you're talking about. They don't do a lot of stuff on the computer. They used to, but now they don't.
Yeah, that's good. So, Ab, you're going to have to take your family for a swim in the lake tomorrow.
Well, they won't. That's the problem, though, is that they won't like that. If you force people to do things, they hate it. You can only set an example of it, can't you?
Yeah, sure.
If you're enjoying yourself, having a good time, and they see that happen, that's what they'll learn from. Whereas if you force people to have a jab, they're not going to be very keen. What I want to see is Dan Andrews getting his jabs every day and looking really great and, obviously showing really what a wow it is to have the jab and how it's going to make his connection to nature much greater and all that sort of stuff, and then I'll be in for it for sure.
Well, they are sort of trying to do that, saying, look at this guy who didn't get his injection. He's locked in his house. I'm busy enjoying a night out at a restaurant. So they're doing that. They are using the carrot and stick approach. But every now and then they let their inner psychopath flare up like your chief minister in Northern Territory.
But what I have to say that I would say the reverse, Ab, because what I've observed is, oh, yes, you've been a good boy, you've had your jab, and now you get to have another jab in 6 months, and now another jab, and now another jab. Oh, we've just taken that passport away. So all I see at the moment is the people that are taking the jabs are getting punished way more than I am.
That's true. Yeah, that's
yeah. But that could be on another level as well. Like you said, how you even just see life. So it's you choose to see life that way. Where I suppose some of them are probably choosing to see the fact that they are free because they've done what they're told. Perspective.
But they're not free, are they? All the people that are taking the jab are now beholden to the jab, and the jab gets taken away. Oh, sorry, that's you haven't had enough of them.
For sure. We see that, but they see the opposite, I believe.
Well, again, it's just a Billy Joel song being written out. Only the good die young, from what I can see. The more good people are, the more savagely they're being punished, is all I can see. It's brutal to watch it.
Good as in obedient.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
the whole thing, complying your way to freedom.
The creepy bald guy in England, your health sinister guy.
Jesus.
He just lowered it to 3 months. Down to 3 months for your top up. Did you hear that? That was yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
In the UK, sure, it's down to 3 months, is it?
They just lowered it. He just lowered it on the advice from the chief medical officer of death.
Wow.
They need to change the name. How they changed the Department of War to the Defense Department? We need to properly name the health minister the minister of death, the ministry that manages your death. That might change perspective.
Well, so what's happening? I wonder where they're deciding to speed it up so much.
I often feel, and I said this last week with BB, is like that the more you see the propaganda ramp up on the whole vaccine thing, I have a slight feeling that there could be a case of, you know, excess stock because of low uptake, but they've just got to sell it harder and harder. You know, they always act desperate, like they've got to meet some sort of deadline, some date, a certain quantity.
Well, they have deadlines. They just didn't let us know what they are. They would like, yeah. I think they need 100% compliance before people catch on. And I don't know. We can't ever know the catch on rate.
Well, you can only go off your own observations, those around you. And for most of it, it probably feels about 90%.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And the numbers, the numbers that a video I put on FakoTube that I found, the guy that did an analysis of bears, and another guy, Steve Kirsch, says bears is 141st. Of the total numbers. So you have to multiply all the VAERS numbers by 41 to get the actual numbers.
Yeah.
Death and injury, which, they said 1%. They said 1 to 10%. So 141st is,
lots of numbers being flown around.
But it means is you multiply by 40 times, whatever they're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, 40 times instead of 100 times. Because it was 1%, you multiply by 100.
Yeah.
But
I think you've also got to take into account that there's a few things here. But like one, say, 90% of people around us have. Out of that 90%, I reckon you've got 30% that are onto their boosters already. And another 30 that stopped at 2. And another 30 that probably stopped at 1. I get that feeling from people around me.
So there's a lot of people that have stopped at 1. I know that.
Yeah, the amount of people told me they had the first one and that was it. And another bunch that have said I had the second. And there's no way I'm going near a booster. Like, they're adamant about it.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder why. I wonder if it's the negative, a personal negative reaction, a negative adverse reaction with someone they know, or if it's negative media that they've absorbed. I wonder.
A bit of everything, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, the guy that did the analysis on the adverse reaction bears from maybe most of 2021, maybe the first 9 or 10 months. His math says it's 1 in 200 is the clot shot, which actually makes more sense than say 1 in 4 or 1 in 5.
Yeah.
But is it a clot shot or is it 1 in 200 people react a certain way to a certain element? You know, it's.
Well, I think they're experimenting. If I was doing it, I would be experimenting with different formulation.
Sure. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
There's no way I'd miss this opportunity. It's just too good. I mean, when you're injecting rabbits and guinea pigs, you can't talk to them. You have no idea really what's happening in a mouse. You can just sort of do a biopsy and make conclusions. But when you can talk to someone that they have a headache, that's valuable information. You can't ask a rabbit how his head is today.
I like what Frank says about, you know, it's to what extent and to whose benefit would you go this far with it, you know? There's no benefit for them either, I don't feel. It just feels very, very odd.
Well, the benefit is that they can convince everyone to be plugged into the matrix 24/7, then they can manage it perfectly.
Sure. It's the psychological and emotional effect it has rather than the physical, I would argue.
The added benefit is if they want to get rid of people quickly, they can.
Yeah,
they
always have that. They're just cancelling the debts that they've built up on our birth certificate.
Yeah, more or less. That's exactly what I was about to say. So therefore, yeah, it could be collateral, but at the same time, our birth certificates to them is credit. That's their credit, our debt.
Yeah, so they're cashing in. They're cancelling out the debt. Once we're dead, they don't have anything.
Potentially. It's quite grim, but yeah.
Only the good die young. Ooh. Yeah.
He was an interesting character as well, I thought.
Billy Joel?
I don't have much to say on him. I just really just recall him being quite, one foot in, one foot out kind of a character.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you could pick up that on certain celebrities when they, you know, if the media publicizes them of having a drug problem or an alcohol problem or a women abuser or racist or, you know, there's some sort of attack on them.
Billy Joel wasn't an attack for anything, was he? They made him marry a tranny. That's all I know. That was his punishment.
Hello.
Are you back?
I am back.
How's your son going, by the way?
He's doing all right. We experimented with the magnesium a bit.
Yeah.
And
did you do anything?
It's too hard to tell. There was a few ups and downs, but that's been a common trend to the whole thing. Anyway, but I actually had a direct taste of that solution, and it's fucking strong. It's very acidic, it feels. At the time, it feels like you're dropping acid onto your tongue or something.
But, it's bitterness, by the way.
Yeah, that's probably more to the point, yeah. But to a point where it felt acidic, you know what I mean? It was very, very strong. So I think that put my wife off a bit from doing it, but, you know, we kept doing it a little bit. But since then, we've introduced a few sort of plant herbal syrups, one from white birch, a set of white birch bark. There's a solution from that, and then another berry, some sort of berry. I've been introducing that, and that seems to have, within a week, had quite an immediate effect.
Oh, so what happened? He was just muscle tension eased?
Yeah, I suppose so. So for anyone wondering, his bowel movements, he kind of will hold it in for up to 3 to 4 days. And,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's been quite a concern of ours, so I've been trying to get on it. But yeah, the most success we've had is through, these little herbal remedies that we got advised from a pediatrician that we did have in Italy, because we sourced him out through someone we knew, and he's very holistic, and he's got about 6 or 7 degrees, no joke, in all sorts, from natural stuff to being a medical doctor to all sorts. So he's got a very broad set of tools to work upon, and he was great for us when he was first born. So we've kept in touch with him, so we haven't even registered our son in the UK in any doctor surgery or anything like that. So they've got no record of him being here, therefore we don't get hassled about vaccines. So it's great.
Isn't that great?
So we still, yes, that's you've got control, you just do it. But so we keep in touch with this pediatrician in Italy, and so he advised us on these herbal things. So we're pleased with that so far. Yeah, thanks for asking.
You've stumbled on a great trick for everybody listening as well.
Well, yeah, have you, since
we are all going to be in a virtual world anyway.
Yeah, sure.
Have a virtual doctor in another country.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hi, this is Dave J from California. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Wow. But yeah, that is the trick though, isn't it? It's just, because I was up for, when my son was born, I was up for the whole no birth certificate thing. But my wife wasn't quite up for that at the time. But
the trick is not to not have a birth certificate. You just don't put your child's Christian names on the birth certificate. You're only obliged to put your family name on the birth certificate.
Cool, cool. Yeah.
So if you have any more children, you can do that.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I was completely up for that approach in general. But and I would be moving forward. But yeah, there's two of us, so I can't dictate that too much. No. So they're the ones that do the birthing. They do all the hard work.
Well, again, actually, in law, it's the person that puts the man who puts his hand up to be the father who gets to dictate everything.
Well, that's okay. It's your seed.
Well, the whole point is you can never know that. That's why the birth certificate's a fraud in the first place.
Sure.
It's because you put your name up to be the father, you put your hand up to do it, but that's why your surname goes on the ticket.
Yes.
It's never.
Because you've got to pay.
You've got to pay, that's right. Yeah. You're the one that's... So, and in fact, that's been proven in law, in court law several times. There was quite a few stories in the newspaper of recent years about a guy who'd, married a woman and knowing it wasn't his child, and then it all broke up and he tried to get out of alimony payments.
But I've heard that.
Because his name was on the birth certificate, they rejected his claim without him, like it took a second for the court case to go through.
Do you know anything about the idea of, because I'm actually willing to do this, I'm about to start looking into it, but where I can, it's something about the father has the first 7 years of that child's life to reclaim it as his property.
I don't know about that, but the fellow who you could ask that for would be... the Christian Remedy at Law guy, which is his email address is, have you got a pen handy?
I do not, but if you tell me it has been recorded, I'll
child144@gmail.com.
Yeah, great, because there's been a few people on Crow777 that have delved into that.
Crow777, there's something about that name I'm just going to tell you I cannot.
Yeah, sure. I get it, but it is a very, very, very useful resource, I find. I had more trouble with his. He's still there. Am I being heard?
No, I'm sorry. I'm listening. Yeah, I was biting my tongue about Great People 7.
Okay. No, fair enough. No, I ended up watching his Shoot the Moon documentary that he filmed. Well, not documentary. That little film he did. Just being curious, and I've got to tell you, I was. I felt you could pull that film to pieces, left, right, and center. All of it. I was just finding holes in the whole thing, and it just felt very, very weird, very, very soft. But then when I hear him on his own show with particular guests, and I do find that they're very much in the on target with a lot of things, very much.
Yeah, yeah.
So I still absolutely pay attention, basically.
Mm. Yeah, I think if you didn't, there'd be nowhere to start, would there? It's like everybody starts with Alex Jones, or in my case, sure, with Marcus Allen. You've got to start somewhere.
Yeah, I think Bill Hicks pulled me into this mess. But yeah, it'd be very interesting to explore that. I want to, if I can talk the missus around it, reclaiming our child would be an interesting journey.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that difficult.
Well, I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's like one of probably the most simplest things, like all, real truth.
I'm guessing it's something like writing to the births, deaths, and registry guys and asking for them to, and basically telling them to remove your son's Christian names from the birth certificate to legally place there, that you were misled into placing his given names onto the birth certificate, and that you must have that error corrected.
Yeah, because that's where they pull everyone in, like even the whole birthing experience within a hospital. You know, I've recently gone through it and seeing the way that that whole theatre goes on, which is why they call it theatre. But just the way it's treated as a medical problem more than a miracle of life.
Yeah.
And just there's a constant sort of reminder of that too. They're always dragging you into this and then dragging you into that. And then immediately after the birth as well, suddenly a doctor appears. He hasn't been there the whole time. But suddenly a doctor appears with a white coat and comes to tell you that, you know, if you don't, you know, if you don't take this and if you don't take that, your child could suffer this and suffer that. Whilst the mother is sitting there in a bloody gown getting over that experience you just had, being bombarded with that sort of message.
Yeah.
And then in the other room, they've taken your child away to like hang him upside down and, you know, check that he's a normal human being. But I lost my cool at that point.
And
I was
take prints of his feet.
Yes, yep, all this. And then they poking him a couple times in different places and that sort of introduction for a child. And then I lost it at that point immediately because obviously, as if I was going to let that continue. So I went and took my son and then walked back into the room where the doctor was giving a spiel to my wife and just told him, enough, enough, enough. Come on, she's been for enough. I'm taking my wife and I'm taking my child. We're going back to the room. Because it's just madness the way they do that.
What were the things that they were saying?
That you're going to be offered a vitamin K shot, and if you don't take it, your child will be at high risk of brain damage, literally. So, my wife's sitting there just after that experience being told that sort of information.
What is the I'd love to know, what is the damage that can come from that? I don't even know.
I don't know.
Do they explain it to you in the hospital in that moment of ecstasy when you're having your child? Do they give you the rundown of this is what it's for?
Well, that's what he was trying to say, is to, you know, they create something, a problem that they're going to protect you against. So that's what they do. They sell you that whole pitch. But, it's, you know, that's a spooky moment for a new family. And you're in the heat of the moment. So you're not sitting there thinking about, oh, you know, I don't consent to this. Can you please give me more information? You haven't even got those words at the time anyway. So it's, very full on. But then they do, you know, then they send a nurse in later that night, holding a needle, saying, oh, is he ready? Is he ready for this now? Like creeping in.
That's cool.
It is. Yeah, unbelievable. And I actually walked out of the room that time and just said to my wife, you do what you got to do, but I'm having no part of this. So I walked out of the room as that happened.
So what ended up happening to your child?
So they gave him a little prick in the bottom of his foot of this so-called vitamin K. But that was the last bit of that. Since then, my wife completely woke up to what was going on there, and she became more of an advocate to not be vaccinated than I ever was.
So is a vitamin K, is that considered a vaccination?
No, I don't believe so. I think they consider it literally as like a vitamin. It's a necessity because they give you the story that a newborn doesn't have the ability to produce enough vitamin K, a healthy amount, which would then...
How the hell did we get here so far before
exactly,
the vitamin K?
Exactly. That was the first thing that comes to my mind as well.
Are we losing thousands of young children due to vitamin K deficiency? You should look that one up if you're out of your computer. I'd be curious to know what the story on that is.
Well, vitamin K is they say anyway, that it's meant to be related to gut health, so being able to absorb food correctly and distribute it correctly. That's the reasoning they give.
No sense.
Yeah.
We're born imperfectly, so we got Absolutely. Civilization got to this point, but yet we need this extra boost to get us past the
That's all it took for me, is that sort of realization. It's just madness beyond that point. It's the most obvious thing. But since then my son's had he has not seen one doctor. He's had absolutely no medicine, any pharmaceuticals whatsoever. He's had one fever in his life and a few little colds and a broken finger. That's about it.
They said it's for bleeding. This is the CDC site. I should say the CDC. The criminals of death and corruption started in 1961. It's needed for blood clotting.
Huh, funny that. It's a requirement for when we give you your future clot shot.
Really incredible that humans in 1961 were found to be deficient. But before that, they were okay. Or babies were dying of internal bleeding. I wonder how much a vitamin K shot costs at newborn, at infancy. Probably $10,000 or something crazy.
That's weird. My wife has just forwarded a text from a friend of ours in Italy that says, raise your son well and without fear, please.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And this is a guy that's had, I think he's had one vaccine at the beginning and then very quickly started to turn since. Well, it's just the two of us now and I've been on for a while, so I might sign off, Ab.
All right. Nice chatting with you. I'll see you. Maybe you'll come on. the Australian Roundtable tomorrow, or the Rick and Roller show, should I say. Got to get
yeah, it's always a bit hard timing for me, that Saturday mornings. It's always,
oh, okay. Good day for you, probably. Yeah. All right, well, all the best. We'll talk later, and it was cool that we got Christine on. That was really
Yeah, that was great. That's why I thought I'd throw that question in there, because, yeah, that's the council I've been hassling with for a while.
Yeah, she's great. She's totally awake, it seems, and I'm going to get her on a show.
Cool. All right, pleasure, Ab.
Take care. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Baby.
Something fried.
This is Lost Spider Fox.
That's all, folks.